You've reached the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Matt.
I'm Liz.
And today we're talking about
my trip to the Bears-Rams game and if you should stream Trubisky this weekend versus the awful Giants.
Hey, is Philip Rivers cooked?
Are the Steelers even more cooked?
Are the Falcons, actually kind of good now?
Rookie pass catchers we're interested in the second half.
And one thing about every game.
Listen up.
Hello and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast. I am Liz Loza here with Matt and Brett. And y'all, I missed you guys on Sunday night.
I know. It was a different vibe with Dalton here. Good vibe. Dalton's great. He brings like a calming presence.
Oh, he's fantastic like that, yeah.
And I felt very contemplated, whereas with you gas me up and I feel energetic about the games coming out of Sunday, so it's a different vibe, but I think it was fun. How was the epic Sunday night football duel between Dust Bowl 1 and Dust Bowl 2?
Well, remember when you asked me for my projected point total or what the score would be, and I said 10-13 Rams,
yeah.
And the score was 10-17. I walked away being like, oh, I'm better than I thought, and I don't like that.
Well, I'll be honest, I forgot about that, but good call by you.
I will say the beers were better than the Bears.
Well, I don't know what kind of beers you were drinking, but that's not a very high bar.
That mango
to
cart
clear.
Stuff from Golden Road is fantastic.
Yeah, no, their Golden Road is good.
How about you sponsor us, Golden Road?
Yeah, come on, give me a break, Golden Road. Get us a beer sponsorship here so I can have some free beers. That's all I really want in life. I will say from watching the game on TV, the obvious moment where, of course, following the game along on Twitter and watching on TV, it was, the benching at the end of the game where the hip situation.
So let's talk about that.
Let's talk about it.
Because in real time, I will say, first of all, Chicago fans travel incredibly well. We were surrounded by them. I was glad I had a Bears hat on and that my Rams shirt was underneath my basic Sherpa jacket, so it was pretty well hidden. But then it was kind of hot, so I had to take it off. Anyway, so Bears fans travel incredibly well, and at the half, or I would say maybe the top to middle of the third quarter, Bears fans started cheering for a Trubisky benching, including our boss, Jason Klobaka. And also Jason was like, you're Jekyll and Hyde right now. You're cheering every single time. And I was like, I know. I had made the decision, by the way, just to root for Taylor Gabriel for fantasy because he was in my fantasy damage, and to root for the Rams because it keeps the NFC West a much more competitive division interesting.
Yep.
So that's what I settled on. But these fans were cheering for a Trubisky benching. And then when it happened, and Jason was like, oh, come on, just give us Chase. And then on the Bears' next possession, Chase was under center.
Yeah.
And everybody in the section was like, he heard us. He gave
nice.
Us what he wanted. Da, 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 da. There was no mention of Trubisky getting hurt, of him walking, being a little hobbled, getting up late from this supposed hit in the second quarter.
You never want to get hit in the sex quarter, folks.
So you can take that out of the show, Brett. Where was I? Chase Daniel.
Chase Daniel
center.
Enters.
Everyone is excited. Then on Monday, I come into the office. I do cover 3, and one of the topics I see on the Google Doc, the production doc, is Mitch Trubisky's hip injury. And I was like,
what hip injury?
How many mango carts did I have?
Yeah.
I don't recall any hip injury. I know when you walk out of the Coliseum, there is definitely the air of Mota in the air, And so I was like, maybe I got a little affected by what was blowing through the breeze. No, this is a lie.
Yeah. Well, number one, it's one of those things where it doesn't make you look good either way if you're Matt Nagy, because number one, if he is hurt in the sex quarter, as you mentioned, in the second quarter.
Probably bench him then.
Then, well, you bench him then. Also, you don't run an option play with him on third and one after that. You don't put your quarterback, if he's your guy, in that position. So, none of it really lines up. Nothing that Matt Nagy does lines up. Nothing that the Bears are doing lines
up
right now.
How about Pinero missing two more? That was really on my radar. So I just want to, I think we have to talk about Trubisky from a fantasy perspective because of his matchup in week 12. It is the last week of byes. We're going to talk about other quarterbacks that may be looking like they're at the end of their careers in a second, but currently he is day-to-day, Trubisky is, with this hip injury. He is facing the Giants on Sunday. That's a team that's allowing the 8th most yards per game, an average of almost 260, right? So, Matt, are you, because I am too emotionally biased, willing to stream Mitch
No. Nope. We just did this with the Eagles the other week, right? Remember just a few weeks ago. You are the one, you are the voice of reason, Liz. You are the voice of reason, like Tank's out there saying, you got to play Trubisky in DFS. And I'm like, hey, this is the Allen Robinson week. 1 for 6. That was the result for Allen Robinson. So I actually, but to that point, though, I think you can play some of these offensive guys. But, like, when I sat there and thought to myself for Wolf pickups, do I want to have Anthony Miller on here? Because, like, the Giants have been getting creamed in the slot. And he's actually, Miller, what did he have, 11 targets last week?
He had double-digit targets, but Taylor Gabriel had 14 and is going to see a lot of DeAndre Baker.
Right.
Which is something I'd prefer over Miller, because you know that Tariq Cohen is also going to be taking snaps out of the slot.
I decided, ultimately, that I'm willing to, like, throw Allen Robinson out there because just the better player, yada, yada, yada. But at the end of the day, I'm not, I am no longer willing to put myself through going down the pecking order of this broken offense, like going that far down the proverbial usage tree in this offense to Miller, to Gabriel. The Gabriel play was all right last week. Like,
yeah, he was a wide receiver 3 in PPR friendly formats.
Could have been worse.
Seven. I had projected him for 5 catches, 59 yards, and a touchdown. I think he had 7 for 56. No touch.
I mean, that's what you're hoping for.
Sure.
I just don't think any of these guys down that far down the line have like a big ceiling.
I guess here is that there's no ceiling, but I will say in deeper leagues, and again, the matchup, the stat I love most about the Giants, and it's not one that's talked about often, is that they've allowed the most plays over 40 yards. And when I think about any of these ancillary pieces with admittedly very low ceilings, I think about Taylor Gabriel and his speed and an ability to exploit that.
Yeah.
So I like him. And I also think about Tariq Cohen, who's also had 6 targets per game on a regular basis. So to me, those two options, Allen Robinson makes sense as well. But these are two lesser guys that I'd be willing to take a gamble on. Yes. I don't want to talk about the Rams side of things until we get to our game preview.
Because I do have a lot of thoughts on the Rams.
But we can do it now.
No, let's do it later.
The Monday, so that the Rams-Bears game was the Sunday night game. The Monday night game was a treat at Estadio Azteca. I'm just going to be real blunt. Is Philip Rivers done?
Is he done? Well,
like a turkey on Thanksgiving.
Cooked like a turkey.
On Thanksgiving. Extra dry.
Keep it with the theme.
They're always dry on Thanksgiving. Ladies cooking them, men cooking them, always like,
unless you smoke it,
up in their heads about it.
If you smoke it, that helps. But nevertheless,
what about frying them? Do you ever fry a turkey?
You can fry a turkey.
Have you ever?
I've never fried a turkey, but have been a part.
What about rock Cornish hens? You like those?
No.
Too bougie. Oh, stuff with some wild rice. Yo, little bones. You got big hands. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Anyways. Anyway. Speaking of little bones, Philip Rivers.
Little bones. Philip Rivers. The last 2 weeks has obviously been terrible. They've both been in big primetime games. The thing with Philip Rivers, and you can, if you think he's not done, I think the story that you tell yourself is like that Packers game not long ago was hyper efficient. I think he overall has played, you know, he hasn't been as bad as he is right now through the entire course of the season, but I think that speaks to just his skill set. Like, he is a guy who needs pass protection. He has terrible pass protection.
Both of those tackles
are off. Both of the tackles are off. And I said this on FFL that Sunday morning, that this was not a game that was going to shoot out because of that reason. Like, the Chargers have to establish the run. That bleeds the clock. And if Philip Rivers gets in a position where he's got to drop back and pass, Frank Clark and Chris Jones are good. And Frank Clark dominated that game. He's been playing much better now that he's healthier. So you can say that, yeah, Rivers is not done. He just needs a much better ecosystem than what he has right now, especially on the offensive line. But we know that with these quarterbacks, when it goes fast often. And, like, is he just in the middle of his Peyton Manning-esque decline?
He has 14 turnovers on the season. That is the second most turnovers to in the league behind just, guess,
Jameis Winston, obviously.
I will admit that in watching that game, because I was finally home for a night and watched that game in detail. And when he threw that pick in the end zone at the end of the game, I gasped. I was very quiet, just like under my breath said, oh, no.
Yeah.
Because I thought this was it.
Went out, you know.
But more of that. I wasn't frustrated or angry. I was more sad, because to me, that was like evidence of the end.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
and it was that pick in particular. And I'd been defending him with the, you know, left and right tackles out as well, and him not being able to plant his feet. But you got to be clutch in those moments. And with that many years of experience, you just can't be forgiven. You're not Brett Favre.
There's a couple of Like this isn't Brett Favre though. Like Right. Remember when Brett Favre, when it was like brutal to watch. I think Rivers is still.
But we're nearing it.
The problem is too. Like I think you can look at that and say like, how is Rivers making these decisions? He's a old ass veteran quarterback.
Yeah.
But also it's like, you know why he's probably making those decisions? Because he's writing checks that his arm can't cash anymore. And I think that's very possible.
I think that's probably right. It did elicit quite of a sad gasp out of me. Let's talk about the Steelers if we're going to talk about quarterbacks who maybe don't have arm strength.
Yeah.
We got Juju out on Sunday. Connor's unlikely to play. Like, can we just say he's not going to play instead of doing this will he, won't he
thing?
I
mean, he said he doesn't even know he's going to travel with the team, so.
Right.
Also, I wrote this in the outline yesterday.
No. I'm not saying, I just feel like a lot of people are like, well, if Connor plays.
It's definitely solidified that he won't play in the last 3 or 4 hours.
And even if he does play, guys, this is a dude who can't finish a game.
Yeah, yeah. You're risking. I did feel his forecast for running backs this week. And that was my point. It's like, even if he plays, I'm going to project him for just 70 total yards because, like,
not going to finish the game.
Mid-game aggravation is very possible.
Deontay Johnson is in concussion protocol. So
he did practice in full today, though.
Okay.
Worth noting.
So he may or may not play. To me, you've got three receivers. You've got Jalen Samuels, who is a receiver and has dual eligibility in our game.
Not anymore.
Okay. And James Washington.
Nope, not anymore.
And Vance McDonald. Mason Rudolph's YPA is 6.3. His ADOT is under 8 yards. So these are a perfect collection of receivers to match Rudolph's
skill set. Hey, don't you forget about Johnny Holton. Just the most unrealized air yards of all time.
I have forgotten /never realized.
It's worth forgetting.
Okay. But of course, the matchup against the Bengals is incredibly tempting. What are you doing?
I think lost in the entire obvious what happened afterwards with Myles Garrett and Mason Rudolph, and that is still an ongoing discussion.
Oh, how bad the Steelers were playing?
Well, I think lost in that is that this was like, if you had any hope that Mason Rudolph was like a salvageable quarterback, he was terrible in that game. I mean, beyond the pale bad. And like, I don't know. Just everything about the guy, not just from the way he plays, is just such a turnoff. Like, I think he plays cowardly, and here we are.
I love watching you choose your words.
I'm being very careful with my
As
words.
As you should, man.
I think he plays very cowardly, and I think that shows up, and it to the point, like you said, he has no ability to push the ball downfield.
He has no feel for the game.
He has no feel for the game because he's a 7-on-7 quarterback. Like, that's what you play when you're in the Big 12 for the most part. Like, you play 7-on-7. You're not getting pressure, any of that. And the second the play breaks down, it's over with Mason Rudolph. I mean, it's dead over. And look, thanks.
So from that point, I'm not disagreeing, right? When you talk about his ADOT and his YPA and all of these things, that is proven out not just in watching the tape, but also in the stats. So assuming James Conner isn't going to play and the matchup against the Bengals is prime for the running back position, how much juice are you allowing Trey Edmonds?
Yeah.
Because the Bengals are allowing 33 rush attempts. They're seeing four opposing rushers try to carry the ball 33 times on average per game. We know this, right? And they're also allowing the most rushing yards per game. And I'm not saying that Trey Edmonds is a world beater.
No.
I remember on Sunday a little conversation about maybe making him part of your wolf pack.
I forgot about it.
Yeah. And if there are, let's say, 30 touches, right? Maybe the Steelers don't even manage that. And also, this is a team that has looked frisky with the Minkah Fitzpatrick trade. The defense certainly looks different than the offense. But coming off of the debacle with Cleveland, they have to win. They will win, assumedly, unless there's a regression to the mean with the Bengals here, right? This could be the Bengals' first win. But you have to imagine that Trey Edmonds and James Conner are both going to get double-digit carries. Trey Edmonds' largest carry total was 12, I believe, back when they played Indianapolis and Conner was out. What was that, week 12?
Yeah.
No, this is week 12. Week 9. That was week 9. So I feel like he can be a flex.
I threw up the preemptive nah wave at the beginning of your
rant
soliloquy there because I thought you were going to say, what do we do about Jalen Samuels? Because to me, Samuels is not an answer as like a runner. He doesn't have it. Like, and people ask me on Thursday night, like in the middle of the game or after Connor gets started, like, do I really go down this Samuel path again? And I said, no, because you just know, like, what it's just a gross, like, 7 for 35 floor as a receiver with no rushing equity. Now, the Edmonds call is interesting. Admittedly, I think that is very interesting because they can't flow the game through the pass, through the pass anymore at this point. Like, you can't do it with Mason Rudolph, much less with these receivers now being hurt with Juju down. I mean, this, they got no juice. So, to me, I think that Edmonds actually is a pretty sneaky play.
From the Bengal side of things, Auden Tate is also in the concussion protocol. So, it looks like you're just going to see Tyler Boyd and Joe Mixon here with some of the Erickson character sprinkled in. Alex Erickson.
Character is a way to put it.
Which is pretty cool. Well, and also, I don't know how the Bengals are going to put any points on the board because the defense, the Pittsburgh defense is pretty good,
particularly
their run defense. And the only real weapon they have is Joe Mixon, who, yes, manages, what he managed 2 weeks ago, 100 yards, but it took 30 carries to do it.
Yeah, he's racked up 48 touches, I think, over the last 2 weeks, which is crazy that, like,
Stop trying. Stop it. Save him.
Like, Ryan Finley is, it's weird, right? Like, Ryan Finley's been a net negative for the entire Bengals offense, which is not unsurprising. Like, Andy Dalton's a pretty solid quarterback, and Finley's been just terrible. He's not he doesn't look like an NFL starter whatsoever out there. But it's oddly been a spark for Joe Mixon, who got, like, needed 30 carries to get to 100 yards the week before. But last week against the Raiders,
sure,
he was much more
solid
efficient.
Let's talk about the Falcons, who, because it was facing your on-again, off-again Carolina Panthers, looked pretty good. I know Kyle Allen's play has been troubling over the past few outings, but I believe he was sacked 5 times. He turned the ball over, I think, 4 times. Yep, 4 times. 6.5 YPA. So this is 2 outings in a row, one against the Saints and now against the Panthers, both division rivals, that the Falcons have put together a pass rush, which is interesting. So are they good now? Was the whole answer just Dan Quinn relinquishing control of the play calling duties and moving Raheem Morris from wide receivers coach to DB's coach?
By the way, I couldn't think of who we were talking, like when we were talking about the younger team, Raheem Morris. Josh Freeman was the quarterback,
yeah,
and the other Mike Williams was the wide receiver. I couldn't remember who the running back was. I looked it up. LeGarrette Blount.
Yes.
LeGarrette Blount rushed for 1,000 yards as an undrafted free agent or something like that on
that
team.
Wasn't that on the heels of that brawl he got into at Oregon, right?
He punched the dude from Boise State. No. He's other player, but he punched that dude in the face, which still, it's still one of my favorite, like, football moments ever. We just cold cocks that guy. But he ended up being suspended, was an undrafted free agent because of it. And then he got signed by the Titans, got cut in preseason, then went to Tampa and rushed for 1,000 yards. Anyways, that's LeGarrette Blount. What a time to be alive.
Anyway, now, the Falcons held the Panthers to 3 points total, and they held Christian McCaffrey to 70 yards. Now, McCaffrey's YPA was really good. They just didn't need him as much in the rushing game because they were so far behind. They had to throw the ball. I mean, he did put up, 10 or 11 balls for over 120 yards. So what are we thinking about this week's matchup against Tampa Bay?
I mean, okay, a couple of things first. Oh,
okay, give me your couple of things. I
think that we can point to a legitimate change, which I think is good, like the actual play calling duties being turned over to Raheem Morris and the other guy that I always forget. Yeah, there you go. That, it does make you ask about Dan Quinn. Like, you can talk on both sides about it. It's like, yeah, dude, like, you delegated to the rest of your team, like, you've had a good resurgence here. That's nice. But also, like, what the hell were you doing? Like, you're a defensive guy, and when you were coaching the defense, it looked like one of the worst coached units in the NFL. And now we have this resurgence for them. I think you can say that, okay, that's real. There is some talent on that team. It just has always underperformed its talent. Also, it doesn't really matter for this week because they're playing the damn Bucks. Like, of course they're going to be a good streaming defense, a good defensive performance against the Bucks. The Bucks are terrible. They have Jameis Winston as their
quarterback. It does matter on Thanksgiving when they will rematch against the Saints.
I think against the Saints.
At home.
And the Panthers. And then they go to San Francisco and they finish with Jacksonville in fantasy. And then they get the Bucks one more time
to
juice that turnover margin. Yeah, so for this week, I think we're going to see more of that ferocious, swarming, pass rush heavy defense from Atlanta. I think it could look a little bit different in New Orleans on Thanksgiving.
Of the pieces, so I think the biggest question is Ronald Jones, right? Because a lot of people like asking questions about him. He was supposed to have all of these touches. Peyton Barber is still in the mix. The Atlanta run defense has traditionally been pretty poor, But are you still sticking with him when you weigh all of the things? And how many rushing opportunities is he really going to have, assuming that the Bucks are coming from behind for most of the game?
Yeah, it's going to be a hard pass for me and Ronald Jones.
Let's just put it out there.
Four carries, two catches for one juicy yard, by the way. After that, he went eight. Admittedly, the week before, he went 8 for 8 for 77 yards as a receiver. Now, I don't think the Ronald Jones thing is worth chasing at all.
What about the Cameron Brate thing?
Well, Cameron Brate is different because O.J. Howard looked like he got legit benched.
Yep.
Played almost no snaps in the second half. Bruce Arians comes out afterward and said he's obviously a talented dude, but it just doesn't seem to be clicking on the field for him. So that could just be an O.J. Howard is not playing all that well sort of thing. And I mean, obviously, we know he had the behind-the-back, like, interception.
I think he got banged because that kicked off. That was the first of Jameis's four interceptions. Yeah. And I think there was – I mean, not only was it, you know, the highlight that everybody showed, but I also think it kicked off the
turnover
unraveling
spree.
The unraveling of Winston. And so he's getting punished extra hard for that.
And plus, like, Bruce Arians and the entire Bucs operation is trying to do whatever they can to let you know that all these interceptions are not Winston's fault. So it makes sense that they would take that out on O.J. Howard. But it's like, look, buddy, if you're going to lead the NFL in turnovers – eventually, some of them aren't going to be your fault, but your receivers kind of owe you one.
And then I think we would also just admit that outside of Chris Godwin and Mike Evans, if you need to stream at tight end because the landscape is so rough, go ahead and move towards Cameron Brate. But Evans and Godwin are the two pieces that you only really want to own and mess with.
I would say so.
You know, Matt, heading into a football season, there are players that flash or maybe they're rookies. And I always think that patience is a virtue and evolution takes time. So not all of these players pan out immediately, but I have noticed over the past few weeks some having some interesting performances, and these players could potentially help fantasy owners down the back end stretch of this season. Noah Fant is someone we should talk about. You liked him last week. I liked him last week. He did have double-digit targets. In fact, he's fifth in targets, seventh in red zone targets since week 7 among tight ends. Without Emmanuel Sanders in Denver, he's obviously seen his volume increase, and his connection with Brandon Allen seems real, although Drew Lock is, I don't know, given the thumbs up in the wings.
Fant, I think, is a perfectly good tight end streamer if you need one. You mentioned the volume has been coming his way. 9 targets, 4 targets, 4, 10 over the last 3 weeks. Each of those games he's played above 80% of the snaps. So, I mean, it's not pretty because, like, I mean, that 9-target game, he caught 5 for 26.
Yeah, I was reminded of watching him play of the hands technique portion of the conversation you had about him in your podcast, your mini pod session, rookie orientation.
It was fun. I really enjoyed doing it. And yeah, you were on the Noah Fant episode. And I think a lot of that, the hands technique, and then also the just like you get anybody around that guy, he's not catching the ball. you know, like anything through contact.
He spooks.
That was your big thought on him too. And obviously 4 catches on 10 targets last week. That's, you're going to live through some inefficiencies. But like how many guys can you bank on volume wise more than Noah Fant right now? Not very many. And I mean, this matchup against the Bills, you want to run on the Bills more than throw on them right now. But at the same time, like, I think you're, again, the volume, you're breaking ties in favor of streaming him if you're out of options.
If you're getting 4 catches and 50 plus yards out of your tight end, I think you're fine. Right.
Yeah, you're not taking a zero, damn it. Come on.
I guess to that end, do you see that Fant's, from the reps he is getting, is the game slowing down for him? I would say everything takes practice, and that maybe next year he might be more on a regular radar versus a streaming radar.
Oh, yeah. I think he still has a lot of potential. The athleticism is there and everything like that. I mean, I would not give up hope on Fant. And I think we knew there was going to be some development coming out of Iowa. You know, he definitely...
I mean, I don't know if you've heard this before, but I hear that tight ends generally don't make the curve in their first year, that it's like a really tough position for rookies to make an impact during.
I have heard that.
You have?
And
did you also hear that Ryan Fitzpatrick went to Harvard?
No, but I have heard that he has like a kid in every state, which is nice.
What?
He has a lot of children. He jokes that, like, because he's played on so many teams, he's has like one.
Oh, he's conceived a child in every state, not with different moms.
As far as I know, no.
In every state.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That was confusing wording, Matt.
Sorry. Looking back on it, I'm like.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, the hound dog.
Hey, man. Long nights.
Lots of birthday parties. I don't know where to go with this one.
Lots of birthday parties. But yeah, Noah Fant, I think, could still be good. Like, look at George Kittle, comes out of the same school. He was like whatever as a rookie, but then he explodes in his second season. I think that's pretty possible for Fant.
And I think he's been identified as a piece that they got right, and so he will have a more featured role.
One of the few.
I think Hunter Renfrow is also in that company. You know, this is a player that I like because he had a good game. Which game did he show well in January of last year?
I believe that is the Senior Bowl.
Yes, my favorite bowl of all the bowls is the Senior Bowl. I really liked Hunter Renfrow coming out of that. We saw him in Hard Knocks. And over the past 4 weeks, his rapport with Derek Carr has certainly blossomed. He's averaging 5.5 looks per game. And he is tied with Darren Waller in overall targets. He's second in red zone opportunities with 5 since week 8. And that's also when Tyrell Williams came back. So it's a fair, you know, distribution of the wealth there. And he's got the Jets this week.
Yeah, and the Jets are all right out of the slot. Brian Poole has been okay there for them, or at least he's been one of the he's like your boy Justin Coleman. He's gotten worse as the season's gone. Also, Brian Poole used to get worked in Atlanta all the time. And when you're not good enough for that illustrious Falcons defense, well.
Passer rating of 115 for Brian Poole currently.
Yep. He's a guy but I would say the thing about him is he's been like the one constant for them, while the outside corners have obviously rotated due to injuries. But either way, I mean, it's a very gettable matchup. And, you know, I think that he was in Wolf pickups this week. So.
Oh, really?
Howl away.
You like him. I like his contested catchability. And I also like the fact that he matches Derek Carr's skill set. We know that Carr, even though he has Tyrell Williams, he likes to check down.
He's got a quick clock.
Yeah.
You want to get that ball out.
Quick clock. Like it. And the Jets are obviously much softer versus the pass than they are against the run. Josh Jacobs has been dealing with the shoulder injury. And Josh Jacobs also isn't as involved in the passing game as we would like him to be, because Hunter Renfrow is there. So I have him projected for 6 grabs, 64 yards, and a touch. That's very generous, I admit, but I do like him, and I think he's someone that's going to continue as he gets the reps, shine, especially in PPR-friendly formats.
I agree with you completely.
Oh, wow, I like that. Well, here's a player that I know that you've been high on. We both have, Deebo Samuel. A little dinged up, but expected to play against the Packers in week 12.
Yeah, they're expected to have, Samuel, Kittle, and
Sanders
all look like they're probably going to play, which I think is good for each individual piece. Like, you'd like it, obviously, if Deebo's the only guy out there getting targets, but you'd also not like it if Deebo's the only guy out there getting targets, because if Kittle is back, if Sanders is back, we know the offense is just better when those two guys are on the field. The Packers right now give up the 5th most yards per play. Their defense, we know, has gone from being what looked like a transformed unit at the beginning of the season to becoming very problematic. Garoppolo, I think you have to give a ton of respect and a ton of credit to what he did last week against the Cardinals. Obviously, the Cardinals defense sucks, but he was able to really do all that without all of his guys here. And he's missing his top left tackle, his leading rusher in Matt Breida. So I like the way Garoppolo is coming on in the system.
But also Arizona, I think the biggest testament to Garoppolo was that Arizona was able to take away the run.
Yeah.
And they said, all right, Jimmy G, throw it. Yeah, he had a couple of interceptions. He had a couple of his brain farts like he normally does. But he threw for over 400 yards.
Yeah, when you're that handsome, you're going to have some brain farts. You can't have everything. Come on, give me a break.
I'm flustered now just thinking about it. My goodness. But I do think that the Packers are going to employ a similar strategy here.
I think so, too. I think they'll use a lot of pressure. And they have been a defense that you could run on. But the fact that they've moved like Adrian Amos between like
safety
and like box linebacker and everything. They're still trying to kind of figure it out.
That's because that Savage kid was banged up for a bit, too, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they're still just trying to figure everything out. But I like this game to get pretty higher scoring. At least, I don't think it's going to turn into some kind of wild shootout, but I do think that we can't expect it to go over its projected total right now. And I think that both of these offenses are looking good. And then on the other side of the field too, like the Packers, I think their running game is going to have to be a focus too, because that's how you beat San Francisco. And Arizona has run on them all right the last two times. Last week wasn't as great as Kenyon Drake's debut, but the Seahawks got over on them too. So
It's a little master versus teacher, too, with LaFleur coming from the Shanahan tree. And both coaches obviously like to focus on the run. Only one of them, however, has Aaron Rodgers.
One of them has Aaron Rodgers and, like, two really good running backs. So, yeah.
I think the advantage goes to the pack. And you mentioned the over-under on the game. It has gone up 2 points since it initially opened to 47.5.
But, yeah, and Debo, though, I think is a guy that I think you played Debo pretty confidently this week.
I think he's a nice flex. He's coming off of two over 100-yard efforts. And I also think that this is a person in Dynasty or Keeper Leagues that is only going to flourish in the future. And he is absolutely – he's a fantastic fit for Shanahan's system, and he's working. It's not just about – like, we thought that maybe Pettis would be a good fit in the system, but it's not working for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. Debo is working, and he has a gadgety ability. I love that he's getting rush attempts here and there, too.
Do you know what has surprised me most, though, about Debo? Like you said, we talked about him a lot as a prospect. We both really liked him for his versatility here in this offense.
The ability to be multiple.
The ability to be multiple. And, like, I thought Debo ran a great slant route. I didn't think he'd be a great, like, deep – threat, but he's been getting like deep post looks, getting down the field more. I think that's been a pleasant surprise for even people that like Debo a lot. The fit here was more because of that versatility and the ability to be a quick hitting route runner, but he's been much better as an overall player than I expected.
He looks faster to me than I expected too.
Yeah.
I liked him
got
because
a little fire
he was
hydrant.
Tough. Well, I liked him because he was tough, but I think he's been quicker. I don't want to say faster because fast people tend to think about, you know.
Yeah.
But I think he looks quicker. And so that's been helpful. Darius Slayton, man. This is a guy that I don't think anyone anticipated emerging into a real thing. If you're looking at the Giants' offensive pieces, which of these things is not like the other? It is Darius Slayton. So he stands out, right? He is 3.8 best touchdown to reception rate in the NFL since week 7 among wide receivers, 14.8, the fifth best average depth of target since week 3 among wide receivers. We love those air yards. I don't know if I love his matchup against the Bears this week, though.
Yeah, you typically beat the Bears. If you're going to beat them through the air, you'd beat them with interior pass catchers. It seems like it'd be Golden Tate or Sterling Shepard if he's back. I don't think Evan Ingram is going to play in this one. So, yeah, I think that – I don't know that this is the week to be using Slayton, but he's a guy that's really been impressive and I think has a future with the Giants.
Andy Isabella, any love? Is he going to catch an 80-yard pass every week?
We'll see. I mean, you would think – that eventually he would start to get more involved, but it seems like they haven't quite figured out a role for him. But if he does get on the field, I mean, look, I keep talking about how impressive Kyler Murray is, and he just continues to impress and be very captivating as a player, that I think he's one of those type of guys that if Isabella starts to get more playing time, we're going to be interested because of the quarterback he plays with.
Something I'm interested in doing with you, Matt, right now is going through each game and mentioning one thing that
all
we're
right.
looking for. I'm going to go first. I think I'm going to do all of them. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Last time that wasn't the plan and it fell apart.
Yeah, why don't you just kick them all off?
All right.
Just be the tone setter that you are, Liz Lozo.
Broncos at Bills.
The one thing I think is interesting from this game is obviously John Brown and Josh Allen. Great games last week. Well, here, I'll talk about something else.
Okay.
I think Buffalo is emerging as a team that you can really run on. But under Brandon Allen, these running backs have kind of been wiped out in the passing game. Allen has been more mobile than I expected, I think more than anyone expected, and we know that rushing quarterbacks typically don't throw the ball to their running backs as much, they don't check down as much, because when they get that deep in the progressions, they're going to take off and run it. And I think Allen has surprisingly been that guy, which makes the floors for Lindsay and especially for Freeman problematic. I think that you can chase a floor with Lindsay here. He's a guy that I would play against this Bills run defense, and I don't care what they did to Kalen frickin' Ballage last week. But I don't know that you play Freeman because of that lack of passing involvement.
So last week you mentioned Josh Allen, and he obviously showed out well against Miami, passed for 3 touchdowns. The connection with he and John Brown was evident. But even though Stephon Diggs got the best of Chris Harris last week, I'm still not going to mess with this, mostly because I feel like since shifting around some D linemen and some linebackers, the pass rush in Denver has gotten better since it was at the top of the year.
Well, actually, though, what? Since week 9, they have the lowest pressure rate in the NFL, the Broncos do. So they're back to kind of being more miss than hit. But they did have a good stretch there. And Josh Allen's certainly a guy who can get himself into pressure.
But that I also I'm aware, but I also feel like the Vikings O-line is affecting that stat a little bit because they are giving Kirk Cousins a fair amount of time.
Yeah, surprising to see.
You're not going to see the same composure out of, I can't believe I'm going to say that about Kirk Cousins, but you're not going to get the same composure out of Josh Allen. And I don't think he's going to have as much room to run, and he is more likely to get sacked. And I also don't think you're going to take away his best receiver in John Brown with Chris Harrison coverage. So I don't want to touch either of these guys this week.
I'll play John Brown because of what Stephon Diggs did last week, and they were able to get him away from Chris Harris on some of his bigger plays, too. We'll see if the Bills have the same capability to do that with John Brown. Plus, I mean, he's so good, A, and B, he's been just getting tremendous volume. I think it's fair to lower your expectations, but I think this is still
so a lower spot. Him to wide receiver 3 or wide receiver 2, understanding that you have a wild love for this player.
Low end 2, boom or bust potential. Understand sure. that you're putting some volatility into your lineup.
Low end 2, I would say I'd flex him, but I have trouble putting him in as a wide receiver 2. So that's fair. That's about the same.
Yeah, with all my biases involved.
Dolphins at Browns.
I mean, this has got to be the Baker Mayfield game, right? This has got to be the OBJ game. This has got to be, I mean.
If it's not. I mean,
what
I don't,
the hell?
Like,
yeah.
just go to Mexico for a vacation and don't come back.
Yeah, cancel the rest of the season if this isn't it. Baker Mayfield has a lot of touchdown regression, positive regression coming his way. That should be able to work against the Dolphins, who, since their little 2-1 little run here that they just had, they only average 1.3 sacks per game. Their pass rush is not intimidating. And Cleveland, I mean, they just...
Neither is Cleveland's right now either.
No, Cleveland, I think both these offenses...
Nobody's talking about that, though.
Both of these offenses are good to go for this week outside of Kalen Ballage. Just don't do that to yourself. You just really don't need to do that to yourself. But anything on Cleveland's side, like to go with the narrative here, like they desperately need this win, because think about how annoying it's got to be for Cleveland. Like, you just beat the Steelers in prime time. The Steelers whoop your ass every year, and you finally beat them in a big spot in a season where you need that win. So, like, just need some refreshment that bad.
It's not what anyone remembers.
And no one cares because of obvious reasons. Like, no one's talking about it. I think, and look, like, Myles Garrett wrote his legacy or his destiny in pen, and like that will be discussed for the Browns for the rest of this year and beyond. But like, they just a slight change of the narrative here with like a really good Baker Mayfield, a really good OBJ game.
Isn't it
help.
Tainted against because of the matchup though? Like, this is one of those, the stakes. This is like the Jets game. If they don't win this game, the stakes are almost so much higher because the team is so bad.
But I just think like Cleveland still has a lot to build towards. Like, This has been my point with this team for, since it's been apparent that it ain't gonna happen. Like, 2019 is over. We're thinking about, like, what foundation are we building for next year, for 2020 and beyond, salvaging Baker Mayfield. Like, yeah, it will be obviously tainted because of the matchup. But, like, if the Browns go out and drop a hammer on this Dolphins team, I think it says a lot just to get some positive air back in the room. And they have a lot going for themselves offensively right now. Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham, the connection still is a little hit and miss, but Beckham has been getting a ton of volume. They've quietly successfully integrated Kareem Hunt into the offense as a receiver.
They folded him in as opposed to just saying, here you go, guys.
Right.
Which they did not do with the receivers.
No, they had a good plan. A good plan for Hunt.
They employed one.
And frankly, like, I know, running backs don't matter or whatever, but if you just look at what Baker Mayfield is doing with Kareem Hunt, like having that layup receiver
yes.
has been a huge help. Last 2 weeks, he has a 102.7 passer rating and a 92.3 passer rating. No interceptions, 4 touchdowns between the two games, completing 68% and 53% of his passes. But like, yeah, so I think overall he's been a helpful force.
There's a security blanket. You said running back talent doesn't matter, so I'm going to throw out a name. You're going to roll your eyes and say gross and not want to do it. But Patrick Laird.
Is anything but Ballage.
Patrick Laird. You made the point back in the Mark Walton days, whatever, a couple of weeks ago, they've all run together at this point, about how the Dolphins are in full evaluation mode, not even tank mode, though they have won 2 of their last 3. So Patrick Laird is interesting here because the Browns are going to be out without 3 of their key players. We know that Morgan Burnett's out. Not that a safety is going to affect a running back that much, but like, and Myles Garrett and the other D lineman who was involved.
Ogunjobi
is also going to be out. Laird caught all 6 of his passes last week. I mean, I know that the narrative around Fitzpatrick is that he obviously likes to air it out, but he's only got Devontae Parker now that Preston Williams isn't around to do that. So I think Laird has sneaky PPR potential in this week because I do think that the Dolphins are going to – the coverage is not going to be as good, and I do think the Dolphins, we know they're going to chase, and they might be able to catch up a little bit better.
Yeah.
We've seen this team hold their own for the first half of games, and then it usually falls apart in the second half.
Yeah, and look, Garrett – for everything that we're talking about him right now with, for obvious reasons, like, great, he's a great player.
Yeah.
He's a great player. Like, removing a player like that from the defense has a ripple effect, and I think that can bring a running back like Laird.
Patrick Laird.
Whatever.
PL.
It's probably the last time we'll ever talk about him.
1% owned. Interesting. By the way, he might be on some fantasy damage on Fantasy Football Live on Sunday morning. Let's talk about Panthers at Saints. One thing real quick.
This is the Alvin Kamara eruption game. He's outtouched Latavius Murray 35-19 over the last 2 weeks. He's been awesome as an individual talent. I don't give a shit what the Panthers did to Brian Hill last week on one of the worst rushing offenses in the NFL. I think Kamara smashes this week, and in context, he's pretty cheap in DFS.
I like Jared Cook again. I was wrong about Traquan Smith. My mea culpa.
Cook, $12 in DFS too, by the way, which is crazy.
Seahawks at Eagles.
So we didn't talk about Nelson Aguilar's burner account on the top of the show, but I don't care that he's online. Like if it's him, I don't care if he's online like defending himself. But the thing that sticks out to me about this little saga is the part where he says, you know, like Foles threw a better ball than Wentz. Like if Foles was there, these receivers wouldn't be dropping passes. This illustrious burner account. And the only thing that's interesting about that, again, if it's him or maybe it's someone that
matches the narrative,
It matches what you hear, what I hear coming out of that team. There's something to this, and the Eagles desperately need to salvage their season. We've talked about that a lot on this podcast, about how they can involve the two tight ends, how they can run the ball more, yada, yada. But, like, if this team is, like, out on its quarterback, I don't know that it's going to happen.
And that's been the report since the first season, right? We've heard numerous – I said earlier this season, the locker room's a mess, and they don't want to play for their QB. But Jacob Hollister loves playing with Russell Wilson.
Yes.
He is the Will Disley replacement out of Wyoming. He's put up 3 touchdowns and 2 top 5 fantasy finishes over his last pair of games. Stream him. Love him. I think he finds the end zone. Probably has 5 catches, 58 yards on top of that. Let's keep going down this list. Lions at Washington.
Bo Scarborough.
Boom. Yes.
Is he a thing?
I think in this matchup, he sure is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're ever going to see him catch passes with McKissick and Ty Johnson back there.
And Danny Amendola.
Danny Amendola basically being a running back. I think I like Scarborough a lot as a flex play here. Also like Jeff Driscoll for $24 in Yahoo Daily Fantasy.
I put him in my DFS guru thing,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, me too. We're both on that train.
Looked a little bit better.
We're riding that train to hell together. He runs. It's nice. Again, this is Washington.
Trubisky or Driscoll?
Oh, Driscoll, for
right?
sure.
I said the same thing, and people shot it down in a production meeting for a different...
Dude, playing Mitchell Trubisky. Like, you don't want to do that to yourself.
Geis or Adrian Peterson?
Who cares?
Let's answer the question for people. Geis or Adrian Peterson. I am surprised that he is worked in as much this... I mean, they were working him in. I'm surprised that they're giving him this much work this quickly. But I do think Peterson's got a toe issue as well, and it looks like he is not the favored back.
No, he had 9 carries last week. I mean, the problem is just why I said no is because this is a bad offense.
It's a game flow.
This backfield ain't big enough for the two of us, honestly. Like, there's not room for two backs.
Raiders at Jets. I already like Hunter Renfro. We talked about that. Jamison Crowder does stuff every week, and this matchup means he's probably going to do more stuff.
Where do you rank Sam Darnold out of quarterbacks this week?
Oh, I think I have him around 15.
Yeah, I think he's at the top, like, normal streamer.
Yeah. Jaguars at Titans.
Foles going to look better in this one. Here's the thing.
Not against the Titans.
Here's the interesting thing about Nick Foles and like how it affects the entire offense is that we know that like Gardner Minshew played a much more traditional quarterback role in terms of like under center, drop back passing game. Nick Foles likes to be in the shotgun, run that type of offense. And that's not really what Leonard Fournette does at all. Like Leonard Fournette's a behind the eye type of back. And it seems like there's a bit, which again just speaks to the front office, but it seems like there's a little bit of
a disconnect
there.
I think that's an astute observation.
DJ Chark rocks though.
DJ Chark does rock. My only point was if they can't get Leonard Fournette running, then this engine doesn't run. And I'm not sure Foles is the quarterback who's doing that, even though we thought, and especially a matchup against the Titans, a pretty good run defense.
Pretty good run defense. And then on the other side of the field, Jacksonville giving up the most yards per carry in the NFL. The Derrick Henry haters will be furious for yet another week.
I definitely have Henry ranked well above Fournette in my rankings. Cowboys at Patriots. To me, I'm going to go first. To me, this is the Dak game. Because if Dak passes for over 285 yards, you pay him, Jerry. Like, yeah. This is where he proves it. The Cowboys are a team that knows how to beat tomato cans, but they have trouble against other good teams. This is especially in New England. If Dak can hold his own, to your point that you fantastically made at the NFL, at the FFL halftime show last Sunday, Dak is the engine of this offense, and he should be in the MVP race. I think this is going to be the test for him.
What I've said about Dak in the MVP race is that he needs signature moments. This was this, and then a Week 16 matchup that could decide the NFC East in Philadelphia will be two of those moments.
Did you say that, Bart?
In a piece I wrote about it.
Oh, okay. I was like, I don't remember
47th time that I've referenced this article. But yes, I think...
Should I just read it? Should I just read the article?
It's like 3 weeks old at this point. I put one out today you can read, or not. But I think that generally, like... This is the type of thing he needs to have. A win in Foxborough would be huge. The question is just like, this is legitimately the way the Cowboys offense sets up. Two things on this. Number one, like, I think Bill Belichick can do what he does to a lot of great receiver tandems, which is put Stephon Gilmore on the lesser one, Michael Gallup, and then double Amari Cooper.
Yeah.
And then this is where it's like, Dak, can you work with Randall Cobb, who you've worked with pretty well the last 2 weeks? Or is 45-year-old Jason Witten a thing? Like, give me a break.
Tony Pollard, I think, might be a sneaky play in this one.
It's like, how do you possibly have the confidence to do it? But I agree, I wouldn't be surprised if he come out of the Sunday games and he has a touchdown or like eight catches or something.
You put both running backs in the formation, but you run Pollard out as a receiver in a play, knowing that both of your number one and number twos are going to be taken away.
And the only thing that makes me a little nervous about this entire thing, because I never thought I'd say this, but I love watching the Cowboys. I think they're one of the most fun teams in the NFL to watch, and I've disliked the franchise for a long, long time. But what makes me worried about them, and what makes me just always afraid that like they're going to lose to a good team, is I think they are too conservative as a team, and it bothers me that Jerry Jones is out there saying, like, why wouldn't you give the ball more to Zeke? Like, give the ball. And it's like, Jesus, man. Like, come on. Look at your team and get your head out of your ass.
Quickly, from the Patriots side of things, if you were planning on streaming Mohamed Sanu, he is banged up. It's not going to happen. So if you've toyed with that experience, if you messed with it last week, I'm sorry. You can't mess with it no more.
And one last check-in on Narrative Street. The articles have been creeping into the atmosphere this week. Is Tom Brady not an elite quarterback anymore? Is this the end of the line? And in past years, I don't know that he has the guys in the passing game to do it this year, but in past years, that usually indicates whichever team gets to come into Foxborough next is usually going to be put 6 feet under. So we'll see.
He also said that, though. I mean,
he's frustrated.
He is frustrated, and he said we have to focus on our defense is the heartbeat of our team.
Yep.
And we need to focus on putting them in a better position, which I think means more running the ball. I think there's going to be a big James White game, frankly.
Hopefully some of the offensive line, like Isaiah Wynn, comes back.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a key thing. The offensive line gets better. Maybe Sony Michel can be a usable running back again.
I like his trust with James White, especially.
Remember Damian Harris? Remember that guy?
He's hurt.
Yeah.
Let's skip Packers at 49ers because we already talked about them a little bit and go to the Monday night showdown. Ravens at Rams. I have tickets to this game, and I don't think because I have so much work to do, I'm going to be able to go.
That sucks.
I know.
Just tell people you can't work.
No, I can't do Fearless Forecast or do the pod on Tuesday, guys.
Well, there you go.
What?
Pick one or the other. So we'll see you in 2 weeks.
I really want to go see Lamar Jackson play live, but I just don't think I'm going to pull it off. But it doesn't matter. Let's preview it now. You had a lot of Rams talking points, so I want to make sure you get those in.
The Rams, again, Todd Gurley had a good game last week, probably one of his best fantasy games. Obviously, saw season high in carries. He scored. He saw 36 receiving yards. It could be just a fluke. I've been really hesitant to trust that we know anything about Gurley at any point because things change week to week. But it was encouraging. I don't know if you noticed this at the game, but talked about a lot on the broadcast. And you go back and rewatch it, you can tell that their offensive line is bigger. They ran with more power.
They reshuffled.
They reshuffled. And they didn't run those outside zone things. Like, honestly, it looked like they were running CJ Anderson last year when they switched to more, you know, Robert Woods was out of that game. Brandon Cooks was obviously out of that game. Both those guys might be back this week, but
that'll help Cooper Kupp.
That will help Cooper Kupp, but it will also, I do wonder if, like, maybe we just don't see the spread as much and we see more power sets, because when they went to power last week as opposed to running zone in the outside stretch, that was much better for Gurley to just get downhill and get into the open field.
27 touches. I mean, 27 carries, I believe. And then he did score a touchdown through
25,
the air.
I think, in three catches.
Was it 728 total then? Something
yeah.
like that?
Yeah.
It was a lot of carries. In fact, our own Frank Schwab wrote a pretty good, I really liked it, a good article about Todd Gurley's usage and what he said after the game. I myself was paying close attention and actually turned to Jason and said, well, they take him out, we've won this game. We being the Rams. This time. The Rams have won this game. No, in the fourth quarter, after Malcolm Brown scored, why is Todd Gurley on the field? Knowing what you know about his durability, just pull him, maybe get Henderson some reps. You're not going to lose the game here. So I was surprised that they were running him to the extent that they were, but I think you're right, and you make some excellent points about that O-line being reshuffled. What about the league MVP, Lamar Jackson, taking on these Rams?
Yeah, I mean, I think
here
this...
for it.
Hell yeah. Look, Lamar is the most exciting, most fun player to watch in the NFL, and I don't think it really it's a debate. And I just think it will be really fun to watch him go against a great defensive coordinator in Wade Phillips. And I think this is going to be like a pretty low-scoring game, because how the hell is Jared Goff going to put up any points on this Ravens defense that has been remade?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, their run defense, a little bit banged up, but like their run defense is solid, and the secondary we keep talking about is next level.
And they did a lot.
And there's
a
Marcus
rushing.
Peters revenge game here.
Oh, yeah, it is.
A new revenge game, too. It still burns. Like, that wound hasn't healed yet.
Yeah, this is a fresh revenge game. Hopefully it goes better than Gerrion Conley's revenge game against the Raiders, like, 5 days after being traded there. But Marcus Peters might be a little bit better than Gerrion Conley. But I think it's also noteworthy, too, what the Ravens did a lot as a to get some pass rushers free. They really dominated the line of scrimmage defensively, which we haven't seen them do very much against Deshaun Watson last week.
Only prediction I have that might be semi-bold is that Cooper Kupp is going to bounce back if both Woods and
Kupp. I think that's fair. You want to attack Baltimore in the slot anyways.
All right, DFS, we both like Jeff Driskel. You like Russell Gage. If you want to talk on him real quickly, we already talked about Jared Cook.
Bucks are top three in yards and catches and touchdowns allowed to slot receivers. Gage has lined up inside since Mohamed Sanu has been traded 74% of his snaps. He's been 48%+ snap player in general since that trade in the 3 weeks, and obviously the Bucks are terrible.
You got it. Taylor Gabriel also is cheap. We mentioned him back in the season. Taylor Gabriel, Bo Scarborough, Jalen Samuels, those are all really good value plays. We will be back on Sunday for our Week 12 recap. You can follow us on Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. I'm at Liz Loza_FF. That's at Matt Harmon _BYB. We are out.